Hello, I'm Lucy Reeves, and you are listening to the Improv Conspiracy Podcast. In this episode, I talk about love.
Improv Conspiracy Podcast with your host, Bronny.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Improv Conspiracy Podcast, the first ever live podcast ever in the world. No podcast has ever been live, but this one is live. Tonight's guest for the Improv Conspiracy Podcast is Lucy Reese. They're a dramaturg, director, writer, actor, improviser, legend. They have so many things to offer us. And they're here to talk to you. Hello, Lucy.
Hello, Ronnie.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Very good.
And you're here to talk about what?
I'm here to talk about love.
Love.
Which is my favourite thing in the whole world.
Hit us. Tell us about love.
Not even just in improv. No, I'm talking about love in improv. I just think it is the sweetest thing, the best tool in our toolbox. It makes often for an easier scene, but also a better scene. I often, when I'm teaching, I talk about easier paths through, how in improv scenes there's no right or wrong answer and there are no rules, but there are always these easier ways through a scene. And having love in a deep relationship is probably the easiest way through any improv scene because it's just like real life.
Oh. Are you saying it's love is the easiest way through life?
No, I'm saying it's the closest that we can get to real life in improv, and I think that improv is maybe the closest art form to real life.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about love in a scene or having deep love within a scene makes it easiest for the performer to find a way through and to find the why and to find the what and to find the who.
And can you blow up that idea of finding the way through? What do you mean when you say that phrase?
When I say finding the way through, I mean getting to the depth of what the scene is actually about and the what of it being able to like coil itself around something that's tangible and like juicy, and that juicy thing is often relationship, and that relationship often has to be deep and therefore loving. And my favorite scenes to do are the ones that are like either there's a lot of love being felt or that there was love and now there's an absence of love, so it's two people reconciling with what that means. But even when there's an absence of love, there's still so much care because love did exist within the relationship.
Mm. Yeah. Are you solely talking like romantic love, or are you just all forms of love?
All forms of love. And I think love is the easiest way, is the easiest word for it, but it is like care. It's like a deep care. I decided to do this topic because I was covering a level one class the other day, and I think it was week two of this level one class, and they have a different teacher, but I was just being a fill-in, and halfway through a student said to me, "Lucy, all you care about is love." And I was like, that is so true. I've also had students, playfully rib me for telling them that they can do that scene, but the their characters have to have known each other for 10 to 15 years to the point where I've had two level two classes call their team at the showcase 10 to 15 years.
Nice.
Thank you.
You're not a good teacher if you're not memeable.
Exactly.
So you got to have your phrases and your pet peeves.
And your thing. And finding out Mama's love was a little bit confronting because I really thought I wasn't like that transparent as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started teaching and I was like, oh, no, you can all see through me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also because hate is like people gravitate towards it because it feels safe because it's defensive and it blocks the heart and I don't show my soft underbelly if I hate something, and also it feels like a shortcut to conflict. and all that sort of thing. But really, love is always on there. Like, if you hate something, you must love something in return.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if I hate that car that you want me to buy, it's because I love my current car.
Exactly.
Because you and I drove it together on our first date,
and
for example.
And we almost went over that cliff, but we didn't.
Yeah, and I hate that cliff.
But well, that's because I love being alive with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially level ones, they're doing the big cross signs to no thanks to love because that's scary.
It is, though. It feels really vulnerable. And I remember, like, I came from a theatre background into improv, and I came with all of this, like, knowledge on what was, like, quote-unquote good in the performing arts, I think. And it was the biggest hurdle for me to get over as well was just to look a fellow performer in the eye and, like, admit that I cared about them because it, when you're making things up in the moment, it feels so incredibly vulnerable to admit that you care. And I think admitting care is it's the best thing for premise. If you're doing like a premise scene.
Thank you, yes.
If you're doing a premise scene and it's about like a car salesman and someone who's coming in to buy a car, it's a much easier way through the scene if the person who's selling you the car is your father that you love, but you're annoyed at because you just want the car that you want. And it's it's so much quicker to become deep within what the premise is and how to like tackle the premise in a way that's funny.
So like their quirk means more to you because you care about them and love them. And so what they're doing wrong affects you on multiple levels.
And therefore you can play the scene for as long as you want. And I think that's the thing I love most about long-form Chicago-style improvised comedy is that it truly is long-form. Yeah, it's like I love being able to sit in a scene and be able to play it for as long as it goes for. And when you're arguing with a car salesman, you can repeat the funny thing again and again, but at some point it's going to lose juice.
Yeah. I've had so I care about love as well, and I've definitely had students, like the class gets on this like, oh, I know the shortcut to Bronnie's heart is to just say, but I love you, or no, I came back because you and I are boyfriend, girlfriend, or just like some, and then like, give me a wink or some shit. like there you go, Bronnie, I love them. You happy? And I don't know that it's necessarily like expressing the phrase I love you. It's just actually caring and loving the character across from you.
My level ones and twos do that too. And I'm just like, good, thank you. Thank you for saying it. It's the first step.
Yes.
it's like a 12-step program, you know?
You have
to say it and then you have to mean it. But at least you're like doing the first steps in like getting to the conflict through love.
Yeah, because a conflict is so sustainable if you care to stay.
Yeah, and it also, and this is my kind of second favorite thing about improv, it leads to really big reactions and emotional reactions. So it means that you can play the smallest thing with your whole body and your whole face. And like your full range of volume in a way that you would just look like a kind of goofy guy, which is also fun. You should also always play really goofy guys because goofy guys are the best. But you can play the goofiest version of a character who gives a shit about something. And it's rooted in this emotion.
I mean, essentially characters who care are like an engine for good scene work and good shows.
Yeah, and I do truly just believe that care equals love. Like we love those shells on the beach. We love, you know, the sky. We love like rain. Like what are the things that we love and why do we love them? And you can connect those things so easily to someone that you care about in a scene.
So what if you're coaching someone and they're like, cool, great note, Lucy, thank you. I'm going to go do that right now. And then they say, gosh, I love playing with these seashells with you. And then they're stuck because they don't necessarily mean it, but they're trying to adhere to, they're trying to find love. What do they do next? What happens?
They connect the seashells to the world. And I think that, well, to the world and to the character that they're playing with. And, like, some of the best ways to do that is, like, metaphor mm-hmm. within improv. Like, metaphor, I freaking love object work as a metaphor for something, like packing a dishwasher and being like, you and I, we just don't fit together like we used to. You know, mm-hmm. like finding yes. things that like finding reasons why shells, like finding a reason why a shell is like the person that you love is so fun. Being yeah. like shiny, smooth, coarse, yucky. Like finding something that you love about your scene partner that can be really gross is also empowering and beautiful.
Mm.
And it's everywhere. And we know it because we all have people who we love who we also find a little bit yucky.
Oh, yeah. I love that you said that because I'm always like the reason we – it's fine to talk about your object work. There's not like a rule against don't talk about what you're doing. Mm. But when you do talk about what you're doing, you're robbing what you're doing the opportunity of being a metaphor for you, your relationship.
Yeah.
If you're just like, oh, look at these seashells. So rigid. Oh, I wonder what kind of crab lived in this.
That's pretty good, to be honest.
Mm. Oh, delicious. Mussels and...
Mussels.
Oh, marinara is probably cooking somewhere thanks to this. You know, like...
Yeah.
Like if we... Yeah, sure, that could be a funny scene and you could care about it. But if you... actually just like resist the urge to talk about that and like be inspired about what you're doing to talk about us, then the audience watches you pick a dirty seashell and talk about your dirty relationship that is full of muck and sand and it's hard to clean yourself
yeah.
off.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, whoa, yeah, well, they're also in the sand. What the fuck?
They're you know, stuck.
And you get the opportunity to look like a goddamn genius.
And it's not. This is the thing, this is the beautiful thing about long-form Chicago-style improvised comedy. Is
TM.
Is that as soon as you start relating the things around you in your world to, like, you humanize them to your scene partner, it's just like smooth sailing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I've used the word easy a lot already, but, and it's obviously it's not easy. There's so many parts of improv that are really tricky and,
like, can I gift you with the word simple?
Yeah.
It's hard, but it's simple.
It's hard, but it's simple. Yeah. It's simple. But is it simple?
No, I think it is simple. Yeah, I think what you're saying is simple.
It's another muscle, though.
Because we do it all the time. We do it. If you have someone that you love and you're vulnerable with, you do it.
Yeah, you do. You look at them and you're, and it's so yuck, isn't it? You look at them and you're like, oh, you're like the sea. And then you're like, oh, I'm the worst.
But also like expressing the thoughts that you have about someone you love. Maybe you don't do that in your real life all the time.
Oh, no, I do.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be better if I did, but I don't enough. But like you have the thoughts. You think the things and the simplicity is like just say the things that you're thinking.
Yeah.
If I do actually love this person across from me and I am truly cleaning a seashell to stretch that scene further than it needs to go.
It's a good scene.
Thank you. It's your scene.
Yeah.
You initiated it. If you just trust that like I can just say the things I'm thinking, that is simple. But it's hard to do because it's vulnerable. Yeah. Terrifying. You worry you'll sound like an idiot. It's not funny. It's not funny in its genesis. The genesis of it is not funny.
No. But do you know what is funny?
What?
Being really, like, emotional about it is really funny because we don't see that played out for us in the real world. Like, if we have big, tense emotional situations in our private lives, they exist very much in our private lives. We don't get to see other types of relationships, like maybe that kind of look a bit similar to how we are in the real world, played out in front of us over absurd little things. And that's why I think that's why improv's funny. It's not necessarily because like we're like bing, bang, bong, button. It's like people are pleasantly surprised by the thing that's unfurling. And I've always said that like I've taught half the people in this room. And I've always said like prov is like better, like getting an awe in a room, like during a Harold or like a student show or like a remix, everyone going like, oh, you're like, I've moved people.
Yes.
And then the next thing will be a laugh anyway because the whole audience goes, oh, and then you've just like set it up for your scene partner to be like, I was trying to think of the seashell thing. I was like, I'll say something to do with seashells. And I was like, I'm not doing that.
Well, if you can get an awe out of them, you've got them long term.
Exactly.
You know that you've got them.
You've got them.
They're invested.
Yeah.
So when Mario and I do swing set, we have to remind each other every single time to love each other at the start of the show, because our worst shows ever have been, I'll be like, I don't know, sweeping a floor probably because that's what I do. And he'll walk in and sweep a floor and then I'll look at him and be like, the fuck are you doing? You know, and like, it's like, it'll be funny for a second and we have a little tete-a-tete and then we're like, oh, shit, we got to make an hour out of this, out of these two people who hated each other at the very start of the show. That sucks.
What do you do in that situation?
What do we do in that situation? Yeah. We suffer through a terrible show.
Right, interesting.
Yeah.
You can't bring it back by just inserting some
Well, what happens generally is I do all my worst habits to try to save the show and Mario does all his worst habits to try to save the show.
And what are Mario's worst habits? No,
I could tell you.
I don't know what the podcast is.
Plot. He's all plot and I'm 100 characters.
Yeah, quick. You like do a spin.
Yeah.
Then I put on a hat.
Yeah, I'm like, fuck the characters. I got 17 hats. Yeah.
You open up the side of the stage and you pull out fairy wings. You're like,
No, what we do is we avoid it from the outset by reminding each other every week to love each other.
Yeah.
We did a session with Catherine Weaver, who is a legend from Impro Melbourne, the AD there. And she pulled me aside. She was giving us like secret challenges. And she was like, you and Mario aren't afraid of intimacy, but you never linger on it. And she was like, your challenge is hold him longer than usual. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it was weird the first time, but it was so fruitful because like different things happened in the scene. I like hugged him at the start of the scene and I just held him definitely longer than he expected me to hold him. And it just like created a new energy that we hadn't experienced before.
Yeah.
And we try to remind each other of that as well now, of like allow connection to last longer than a kiss or on the cheek or a quick hug or whatever.
That would definitely get an awe.
Right? Yeah, it does, I guess.
Yeah,
it tends to.
There's a thing in, like, I guess dramaturgy, like in theatre as well when or any kind of performing arts, when people just, like, look at each other for longer than we as humans feel like it's comfortable to, where the whole audience, you feel them all, like, have a big sigh of relief. Like it's that kind of like waves crashing and then just like falling kind of feeling where there are two characters who are just like looking at each other and you can just feel everyone go like, oh, like that magic, you know, that magic feeling you get from watching theater. And it's like something that I obviously try and push a lot in theater because I'm trying to get people to love each other. And but, yeah, like I think in all types of performing arts, what we're looking for is representation of something that we don't necessarily see every day outside of the space of a stage.
Yeah.
And, like, things that we would like to be better at.
Yeah. You did just touch on it there and I want to know more because you are to be derogatory towards improv, you are an actual theatre practitioner.
That is derogatory.
I personally am obsessed with theatre and I love theatre and have done a degree in it. And I find that my nerdiness around that sometimes clashes against the people who just want to walk in off the street with their AirPods in their pocket and their keys and their wallet and do a little cash show where their foot's always half in the pool. They have one foot in the pool and, you know, there's a disconnect between them and the truth of what's happening. How do you go with that in terms of, like, teaching? Because you teach a spectrum of people, like the people who are keen and nerdy about theatre and those who are just like, oh, I was here because I love Auntie Donna, you know? You know?
It's interesting because I've grown up doing theatre since I was, like, a kid. It's in my bones, so I think I'm not very nerdy in, like, a theory sense. Like, I think I just, like, know what feels good and I follow that. And when I'm, like, directing things or when I'm, like, being a dramaturg in a space, I'm just like, yeah, hold that for a little longer and see how it feels. Or, like, it would be amazing if this person crossed this person at this time and then the lights changed in this way. Like, I have a vocabulary that's probably much higher than people who don't work in theatre, but, like, I'm not like, that was incredibly Brechtian. And I think it's interesting because for me, improv's the same. Like, I have students come up and ask me what books they should be reading and what podcasts they should be listening to. And I always say the improv. But when I was learning, I didn't do any of that stuff. I was just present in class and I really do believe that, like, the things that you learn around the theory of improv outside of class are the best tools for being a good improviser, like just having a lot of knowledge in a lot of different things and then being able to bring that onto stage and, like, tell your fellow scene partners about it through, you know, like when I have when I do scenes with people who are, like, tax agents, I freaking love it.
Yeah.
Because then they're just like, oh, yeah, you've got to get the Excel spreadsheet. I can't even say one line, you know. I'm just, like, terrible with money, tax. But, like, having a broad knowledge and, like, really caring about certain things, really specific things, are so helpful for an improv scene. And because obviously you can't talk about improv while you're doing improv. Like, it's the only no-no. It's a much harder way through a scene. So, like, doing all of the, like, theory for me never really helped. And I really respect people who I really respect people who do all the theory, and I think they're much harder working people than I. But I think that I can still see it. I still want them in class to get it into their bones.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, helping them to work a muscle.
Yeah.
Whether they're a really big improv nerd or they'd prefer never to look in, like, they're just doing the class for fun.
Yeah. I had this level 5 class once and they were all not these people in the room. Thank you for sticking around after class, everyone. they were a particularly, like, heady group. And they were just trying so hard to get it right and it was driving me mental. but I decided to – so I just asked them – I said to them, my brother loves wrestling, like WCW, WWE, all that, loves it. But he has no one to talk to about it. No one will talk to him about wrestling. His, like, greatest day on this planet would be someone saying, what's going on in the wrestling? And he would just be off like a rocket. And so I was like, think about what yours of that is. Like, what's your thing that is that? Like, you think no one's interested in it. And then I was like, you're going to do a scene about that because I just want you to fucking stop trying to do good improv.
Yeah.
And there was this one guy, Scott, bless him, he's a sweet man. He was such a pacey boy. He lives in Adelaide now. We saw him when we were in Adelaide.
Okay.
But he would pace around the stage like fidgety, like just stompy, 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 trying to find scenes. And then I said, he was like, my thing is like English soccer leagues. And I was like, fuck yeah, let's do it. And he came on and he planted both feet and he crossed his arms like, right, so the thing you need to know. And just like told his scene partner stuff that he loved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his scene partner was like, whoa. And the only other rule was like the other person just needs to be super keen on all the information. Mm-hmm. And so the other scene partner was just like, whoa, yeah, what? That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just like riffing all this stuff about English soccer leagues. And he was so confident and alive. And I think that speaks to what you, your whole thesis, which is like he gave a shit about something and cared about something, loved something, and his it was in his bones.
Totally, yeah. And like it also helps to be declarative, which is a good way into a scene, obviously, is to declare and not start a scene with a question. And I think when you give a shit about something, you can declare in a much more – you're not wishy-washy about it in any way. You're not like, I could take English soccer or leave English soccer league. you're like, yeah. I fucking love it. I really love it. It's all I care about and it's what I want. What I want is English soccer league.
Yes, or conversely, I hate it because I love fucking
– seashells on the seashore.
Now for a practical nugget.
Thanks, Tiana.
Thanks, Tiana.
Just a practical nugget that, like, you've given so many, but, like, if you've had any practical nuggets you tend to give.
It's so interesting. I've done so many improv classes. When I look back, I remember kind of few of the lessons because, as I was saying, like, a lot of it's in your bones by the time that you you finish the term. But I'll never, ever forget Josh Chodds saying in my level two class that you can come onto the stage and you can go outside in or inside out. So you can just like strike a pose and that's your character. Mm. And it gives you so much to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're someone who perhaps doesn't make bold physical offers, it's a really good way. As soon as you step on out onto stage, if you're like, I'm holding my arms like I'm holding a cloche.
Cloche?
Yeah, like a cloche.
What's a cloche?
You know. And there's that food underneath.
That didn't tell me
there's
anything.
There's food underneath the big
cloche. There's food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know that.
You had to say there's food underneath for me to understand what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. and then you're like a really fancy guy. You're just like a fancy guy. And in this scene, no matter what's happening, you're going to be a fancy guy. And that fancy guy is going to have all of the aspects of the scene and all of that character's wants and desires with their scene partner. But they're just going to have the most silly English accent you've ever heard. I'm so sorry, Alice. And a plate of food the whole time.
Mm.
And like the heaviest chicken. It's a roast chicken. Or you can be outside in. Sorry, or you can be inside out and let how your character develops in the first few lines of the scene. It can inform your physical character choice. But I'll never forget it.
So you start with a point of view and let that change how your body presents.
Manifest in your body, yeah.
Do you have an example of that that's as good as cloche? Was it a cloche? Cloche.
The scene partner says their first line and then you go, oh, well, I'm a really shy guy. And then you go like this. and then you go like this. you hold your hands in front of your mouth and you go, tee, I'm a really shy guy. That's not what I would do.
I love that.
Anyone else could.
No, that's a great example. So what I'd love to do now is you and I are going to do a scene.
Okay.
And I think one of us should do outside in and the other should do inside out.
Great.
Which would you like?
I'm going to hold a cloche. No, I'll do it. I'll do outside in.
You'll do outside in? Yeah. Damn it. That's what I want.
I'll do inside out.
No, I'll do inside out.
No, because this is an auditory medium.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so they don't need to fucking
know.
They don't need to know. They just need to hear that it's working.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'll do inside out.
You're all beautiful. You'll do Inside Out and I'll do Outside In.
You'll do Outside
In.
Okay,
great.
Yeah. And we'll get a word from the audience and that's how we'll be inspired to do Outside In or Inside Out.
Yeah, great.
And we're going to do it with mics in our hands, which is going to be the worst. Mm-hmm. So, but we'll do it standing because you said, so Lucy said before the show, well, actually a week before the show, I will not do a scene in a chair.
I've never done a scene in a chair.
So we're going to do a scene and that'll be the end of the show. Okay, can we get a word?
Camera.
I'm a bit of a shy guy. sorry.
I need binoculars with one hand.
No, we need to start again because all I thought was I'm a bit of a shy guy and then I was going to do a whoopsie
you
face.
Can wait. You can wait for the first two lines.
What did you say?
You can wait for the first few lines to inform.
No, yeah, I understand. I understand the tip. It's just that I did a gag with the tip instead of actually using it in earnest. So let's. I'm going to do Inside Out. You're going to do Outside In. I'm not going to be a shy guy.
Okay.
That's the one thing I'm not going to be.
Can we get a new word?
Yeah. Chips?
Chips.
Chips.
Chips. Are they for everybody or?
They're for me.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I never really get what I want.
Jared, I'm not marrying you because you're confident. I'm marrying you because you're hot.
I swear to God, I don't understand your standards.
They're
because
like,
when I look in the mirror, I see an absolute slob. But I appreciate the compliment.
Are you kidding, Jared? You're like 5'10". You're like a medium, which is what I love in this world.
That's my occupation.
You're a medium.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So, wait, you only love me because I can speak to the dead?
And because you're like average in almost every way physically.
Oh.
And because you can speak to the dead and I really want to talk to my nana.
I knew it. I knew it was about your nana.
I didn't mean to admit that.
She talks to me all the time.
What did she say?
And she keeps saying, when Mary Bell's ready, I've got some things to say.
That's me, I'm Mary Bell.
I know.
Yeah.
What do you mean by tongue? You don't think I know who I'm wanting to marry? But I want to marry you for you. Just
what about
all,
me then?
What about you? Your soul, your spirit, your energy that you give me and how
can
I feel when I'm around
soul?
You? Well, yeah, I can see everyone's soul. I'm a medium.
Oh, my God. And mine's hot?
Are you Todd?
And my soul is hot?
No, your soul's not hot. Your soul's warm.
Oh, that's close.
No, I mean, it makes me feel warm.
Oh, that's really nice.
Maribel.
Can you tell me more about my nana?
It's not time yet.
No, come on. I have something to admit.
You have more to admit than it's just your nana that you're with me for, even though I love you for all of who you are and your spirit and your soul and...
Yes, what? I have something to admit.
What? What else is it?
First, I'd really like you to tell me about what my nana said.
She said she knows where the remote is.
What?
She knows where the remote is.
Tell me where it is right now, Jared. Tell me where it is right now, Jared.
She hid it in the spare tire in the garage because she didn't want your grandpa to know where it was because the TV was such a source of disconnection between the two of them that she hid it. But then she was never prepared for how you were going to inherit the house and then not know how to use the smart TV.
I need to watch Desperate Housewives, Jared.
She understands. She understands.
That's all I care about.
She's been so sad watching you pace around the living room not knowing what to do or how to watch TV.
I have this bowl of chips.
Yeah.
No one else is here.
I wish you'd give me one. I wish you'd give me one.
Not right now, Jared. Just tell me.
I told you. It's in the It's in the spare tire in the garage.
Okay, I have something to admit.
Tell me.
The only reason why I'm with you is because you can talk to my nana.
You already admitted
that. I have something else to admit.
Go on.
I have to leave you now that you've told me.
Wait. So you weren't really just with me for your nana, you were with me for the remote.
It was Desperate Housewives the whole time, Jared. I'm so sorry.
So you used a cloche, essentially.
I used a bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I did use a cloche. Yeah.
Is it cloche or cloche?
Cloche.
Cloche? Who else knows this word? 50%.
Gosh, I really hope I'm using the right word. I'm pretty sure I am.
Cloche.
Cloche. It's like
like a cloth? No, I don't think this is right. I think this is made up now.
Yeah, it's
is like there any audience questions on the topic or not on the topic? I mean, the topic's improv or love in improv, either one. So the question, just for audience sake, is how do you get the emotion? Do you come in prepared or how do you get there so quickly rather than waiting for it to develop? Yeah.
I think I'm always, like, internally I'm always operating about here emotionally anyway, so it kind of falls out. But also in this scene, for instance, I was like, fuck, my thing's love, and I'm like chewing gum and being like, hi. She's like, not a very easy way in, but I chose to care about something that Bronnie could give me about a character that I did care about and brought the emotion to it. Was that a bad answer?
No, that's great. So, because okay. You chose to care about Nana.
I chose to care about Nana because I obviously didn't, like, even
yeah,
I
there was no love for me.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I found something else.
Yeah. And conversely, so Lucy said to me, Lucy was holding the chips and I knew I wanted them and Lucy said, I can't have them. And so I just knew that would be sad. Because if I choose to love that and want that straight away, because like you can love multiple things, right? So obviously, the dumbest comment ever. But like if I go, that's what I want, and then Lucy doesn't give it to me, I could be sad straight away and then that sadness can feed everything else that comes after that, which means obviously Lucy doesn't love me. When Lucy's character says they're not with me for me, that's obvious to me. And so that just feeds that sadness. So just like, I mean, I guess it's just a choice. You're just choosing. If I want something, can't have it, that's what's the path of least resistance? Sadness.
Yeah. I'm really interested in like happy crying as a concept. Like when people are so happy about something, but they can't like even get the words out because they're crying so much. And also like different aspects of emotions and how you could play them. Like obviously it can be a hard decision to play like angry, but if you play like if you play scared crying, it's a much less threatening way to be in a scene and have a big emotion, but it's not necessarily like a positive emotion as well. So choosing to be choosing to have emotional reactions about the emotions you're feeling is a really interesting thing as well. I think in my head I was being like, I care about these two things and maybe if my character is really emotional about it, Bronnie's character will give it to me. Yeah.
Which he did.
Yeah.
Gave you the location of the remote. On that though, too, fun fact for any TIC students, we used to have the emotion angry in our emotion card set, but I removed them all because angry is like it's non-specific.
Yeah.
But like jealous is angry. You can be angry jealous, but jealous is a bigger gift because there's something that you obviously love. You've lost something that the other person has. And then like resentment is same, like there was love there and there is no longer love. So I am experiencing a negative emotion that is coming out as anger, but it's called resentment. And so therefore it hides within it the gift of relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, the question?
No, I was just going to say, I remember the first time you taught me, it was like a fill-in from
the... Yes, from the audience, anger is a masked emotion. There's always something below it. Mm. Thank you, Alice. Bless your face. Yes?
How do you steer that shit?
What happens if you declare that you love something and no one, you nor your scene partner nor the audience, vibes with your choice? How do you get away from that sinking ship?
I personally would find an aspect of the thing that I loved and break it down into parts. So let's say you love a sinking ship. You love the Titanic. And everyone's like, what? So many people died. It was such a big tragedy. The movie's so long. You can be like, I would be like, no, I just really love a quartet that goes, that like syncs with.
Exactly what I was thinking.
That syncs with like, I love people who keep doing their art until it's the very last minute, and that like art will save your life. So you can make, you can break it down into parts and make that one aspect of that thing the thing that you really care about. And often if you break something into parts, you'll find the thing that you're, that you personally care about, and therefore your character will have a easier time, simpler time connecting to.
Mm. So that the answer that Lucy gave really is don't bail on it. Dig deeper into it.
Yeah.
Trust that it was right, and the lack of vibe is that you just have not been specific perhaps.
Yeah.
And keep going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, don't bail on it. I think that, like, you'll always find it. And even if people aren't like, Titanic, they'll be like, they'll feel you, your feeling and your commitment to it.
Thank you, Lucy.
Life pod.
The Improv Conspiracy Podcast was produced, recorded, mixed, edited by me, Bronny, with original music by me, Bronny. My thanks to Tiana Hogben for lending her voice to the podcast. My thanks to Laura Buskus and all the staff at Theory Bar for facilitating the live podcast. My thanks to Lucy Reese for being the guest. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Improv Conspiracy Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, we'd love for you to take a moment to rate and review us on your preferred service. 5 stars, thank you.